Welcome in, everybody, to another edition of Believe in Titans podcast, your weekly look at all things Tennessee Titans with former Titans cornerback Denard Walker. Denard, how are you?
I'm doing great, David and John. How you doing?
Doing good. John, of course, being John Glennon of All Titans at SI.com. John, how are you?
I am well. Good to be with you guys.
Good to be here. And I am David Beauclair, also of All Titans at SI.com. And here we are, the end of June, transitioning into July, very much the down period for the NFL and for players in particular. It's been a quiet week for the team. No transactions at this point, no off-the-field headlines, which I'm sure franchise officials and coaches are very excited about. But one thing that comes up every year at this time for Titans fans, it's impossible to ignore, is the death, the murder of Steve McNair back on July 4th, 2009. It remains one of the more startling, one of the more, whatever word you want to use on it, episodes, incidents of Nashville's pro sports era. And the fact that so little is going on at this time of year, just lends itself to bringing this up again. So we will do that as well. We'll start with how did you guys hear? Do you remember your initial reaction to the news, Denard Walker?
Yes, I actually received a phone call from a good friend of mine's young lady by the name of Nuwana Harris, who's from Garland, Texas, went to high school with me, but she's from Gallatin, Tennessee. And she was going to Tennessee State University at the time. And she called me. I thought it was at first, I thought it was some form of like a prank. I didn't believe it at first. And I'll tell you what, it was a very, very low moment in my life because of what Steve meant to me. He wasn't just the ultimate teammate, but he was the ultimate person. And he was loved by all of his teammates. He treated every single one of us like we're his own, like a brother. He would always bring his family into the locker rooms, and I love him. I missed him. And I actually had a chance to go to the funeral, flew from Dallas to Nashville. And it was one of the saddest moments of my life. But again, it's just, it was an unfortunate situation. And I just continue to wish the best for his son, Tyler. And God, it was just a very heartbreaking time.
Yeah, it's one of those things. I think it's Nashville sports version of the JFK assassination. Everybody sort of remembers that moment. John Glennon, what was your Steve McNair moment that day?
Yeah, I was of course still working at the Tennessean at that time, and I was actually on the Predators beat. So I was one of the few Tennessean sports reporters that was not immediately called into coverage that day. But nonetheless, obviously word traveled quickly from the Tennessean sports department outwards. And I believe it was a longtime reporter, Mike Organ, who called me just to deliver the news. And I, like everyone else, couldn't believe it at first, and you immediately started, looking on the internet and so forth. Wondering what was going on and mind blowing. I can still remember in those days afterwards, the longtime Titans beat reporter, Jim Wyatt, coming up with one, an incredible story after another, covering, I thought, both the heartbreak of the situation, and also informing the public on everything that had gone on, that tragic day. So just, yeah, I agree with you. It is sort of like a JFK moment in Nashville, and kind of what's it's amazing too, in a lot of ways, that Steve McNair, not obviously not only because of his death, but, more than 2 decades or so after his heyday, still remains kind of one of the pillars, if you were going to put your Mount Rushmore of Tennessee pro athletes up, I think Steve McNair's name is certainly one of the very first, if not the first, that comes to mind. And you know, that's probably you know, as good a testament as any to what he did here as a player in person.
Yeah, it's interesting. My stepfather had passed away the previous October, and in his later days, he had had a conversation with me at one point and asked me to get my mother to move to Nashville. He had always liked Nashville. He thought it was a good, safe place, would be a good place for my mother in her later years. And it just so happened that was the weekend that I was moving her to Nashville, and we had left Philadelphia in her car first thing that morning, and were driving all day to Nashville. We were just this side of Knoxville when a colleague called me to tell me the news. And yeah, your first reaction is sort of like, what did he just say? Like, mm-hmm. Because it just made no sense that Steve McNair would be dead, and then let alone the circumstances by which it happened. And so I spent the last 3 hours of that drive basically reporting this story. You know, I was on the phone with a couple people trying to get details. I remember doing a radio hit, ESPN radio, with Freddie Coleman, and my mother kept saying to me, don't you want to pull over? Don't you? I'm like, no, I can do this. You know, it was just incredible. And then, because it was a holiday, I was working for the city paper at the time, and we weren't going to produce a paper at that point, so there was the opportunity to sort of, you know, take the time, get home, and then do a story, which I did ultimately, and some other, you know, like our cops reporter had already done something at that point too, so it was remarkable. You guys both touched on it, you know, Steve McNair, it is not about how he died. Steve McNair is about how he lived, how he played the game, and whatnot. Denard, your rookie year was Steve's first year as the starting cornerback for this for this team. When you think back, what moments or what characteristics, what sort of defined Steve McNair, the football player, in your mind?
Well, God, David, I can talk all day about the football player, but it's the person that I remember the most. And it started for me actually in my first rookie camp. That was when I got drafted to Tennessee. We actually were in Houston. And when our first mini camp was in Houston in 1997. And we were staying at a hotel. And I remember not eating. I couldn't get out. I didn't have a car at that time. So we had to, when you're a rookie, you had to go to just like a little fast food and get you something to eat. We'd walk over there. But Steve came around, and I remember he told all the rookies, you know, listen, I'm going to come pick you guys up. You can come over to the house. I'm going to cook something to eat, give you guys a good meal. And that meant the world to me. And that's what I remember about Steve. I mean, back in those days, veterans didn't talk to rookies. So you were kind of on your own. But for a guy of that, for a player of his caliber, you got to understand, I went to school in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Steve and I, we came a couple of years before me, but I remember when Alcorn State would come down to Baton Rouge to play Southern, and the whole town, you got to talk about, the whole town will shut down just to see the legend of Air McNair. And I'm at LSU, and that would be the talk of the town. That would be the main story, is Steve McNair is heading to Baton Rouge, Louisiana. And I never will forget that. But it's amazing, when I got drafted, the first thing I thought about, I'm going to play with the Heisman Trophy winner, Eddie George, and I'm going to get a chance to team up with the great, the legend, Steve Air McNair. And for me, man, let me tell you something, David and John, I was excited. And I'll tell you, the one guy, when I got to minicamp, I couldn't take my eyes off him. I'm glad he didn't look my way. Every time I saw Steve McNair, I was just like, I was in shock, because he's a legend. He was a legend before he ever played a game in the National Football League. And so it was an honor to get a chance to play with him. He's the best. He is one of the best. I call him my big brother. I love him to death.
John Glennon, when you think of Steve McNair, what pops into your head right away?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think it was not only his talent as a player, but I think his toughness that was so inspirational and so motivational. You know, I was looking back at some of the old clips and stories about him, and I saw a quote from from our friend Blaine Bishop, played with as
well.
Blaine had a pretty good quote about Steve McNair one week. Said Steve was the kind of guy who could have played back before they had, back when they were still using leather helmets. You know, he was that kind of guy that would eat that contact up. Didn't really matter, the injury and so forth. He would still play through. And, I think the game that a lot of people recall in particular is probably that 2000 season. He gets knocked out of the season opener, serious injury to his sternum. Even though the Titans had the next week off, he couldn't start the following week against Pittsburgh, that just so much soreness, everything he did, so much soreness in that sternum. And basically the only way he was going to play is if it's an emergency situation. Well, under 3 minutes to go, Neil O'Donnell gets hurt. It's an emergency situation. They're trailing Pittsburgh by 4 points, 2016 at the time. They have no choice but to turn to McNair. He comes in. One drive, even as sore and as injured as he is, completes 3 of 3 passes for 55 yards, including the very first play of the drive. It was like a 22-yard completion on third down, and then caps it off with an 18-yard TD pass to Aaron Kinney, and they beat the Steelers 23-20. An incredible moment for Steve McNair. For the Titans. And to me, if there was one game that kind of summed up that toughness, that leadership ability and the ability to kind of come through in the clutch, that was a big one for me.
Yeah. Jeff Fisher has told the story too, that when O'Donnell got hurt, Jeff sort of looked to his side to see where McNair was and see what he was doing. And Steve just sort of looked at him and winked. And went to go get his helmet. This is just fine. It's funny. There's all the obvious stories. There was the another playing through pain against the New York Giants during his MVP season in 2003 when they won that game in overtime. The 91-yard run against Tampa Bay. I mean, you could go down the list. There's one thing I will never forget. This, my first full year on the beat was 1998, and early in training camp there was they were getting ready for a preseason game against Washington, and they had played Washington in the preseason the year before. It was either the first or second preseason game, and McNair was terrible in that game, and it took me some digging today, but I did go back and find the stats. He was, and when I say terrible, I mean 4 for 16 passing for 14 yards. I mean, it was a terrible performance. Titans lost that game 18-12. So the next year they're getting ready to play Washington in the preseason again. And I remember being at Tennessee State University, walking off the field with McNair, and I want to talk to him about, the fact that was just sort of a comically bad day for him in the offense. And, there was nothing like that in what followed during the regular season and whatnot. And I started asking the question, and he just gave me like a 1 or 2 word answer. And I asked something else, and he sort of brushed me off again. And finally I said, after all this time, you can't look back at that game and just sort of laugh about it now. And he said, absolutely not. And it was my first real sense of, this guy is like crazy competitive. It was a preseason game, right? It didn't mean anything. And he was the starting quarterback the whole year after that. I mean, it didn't hurt him in any way, shape or form, but he was still bitter about it a year later. And then there was one other exchange we had. This was several years later. This was when he was very much in his prime and doing his thing. And I'm a young reporter. I'm ready to go change the world. And I'm going to write a story about how Steve McNair was wronged during the recruiting process and how so many big schools wanted him to play safety and, the whole black quarterback story and whatnot. And he didn't want to go there with me either. And it wasn't a confrontational sort of thing, but finally he just looked at me and he said, you know what? He said, it wasn't about a black-white thing. He goes, it was about what teams what different schools wanted to do with their best athlete. And wherever I would have gone, I would have been the best athlete on the team. And he said it in such a matter of fact way. And it, you know, as I think about it now, and I remember thinking about it then, like Steve was so unimpressed with himself. And make no mistake, he was an off the charts athlete. I mean, we've all seen what he can do. And it's sort of like Bo Jackson in that way. It's just sort of like, yeah, well, that's fine. Like he wasn't ever trying to impress anybody. He wasn't trying to impress himself. He knew how good he was, and he just went out and did his thing. And those are the kinds of things I think about with him, because he's guys like him were just built differently. And you know, Denard, you played with him. I'm going to give you the last word on Steve McNair. Give us one more thought here.
Well, you know what? That's what happens when you're born and raised in Mount Olive, Mississippi. It's just, I played with a lot of players from Mississippi, and they're all the same. You know, they're just laid back country boys. And that was Steve McNair. He was just a country boy. He kept the same demeanor. I don't care if we played in a Super Bowl. He probably played his best game, but we came up short. He'll keep that same demeanor. He was never too high or too low. And that's what I loved about him. But he was competitive in practice. We used to go at it. We talked noise to each other. But what I loved most about Steve was he always kept, like, he stayed true to himself. He was very humble. Like I said before, when you see Steve, you didn't just see Steve alone. Steve would always have all of his brothers with him, every single one of them. I don't know how many brothers he had. It'd be about 4 or 5 of them be in the locker room with him. But what you also loved about him, not just how humble he was as a person, you loved that the fact that he was a giver. Steve did a lot of things in the community. He got out there. I know he had a lot of youth football camps throughout Nashville, the surrounding areas. I know he did a lot in Mount Olive, Mississippi. I mean, he was just a wonderful person. He was so respected by all of us, all of his teammates, his peers throughout the league, because that was just Steve. That's who he was, you know, as a person. You know, sometimes in this game, I think sometimes you can get lost. You can get lost in the money. You can get lost in the pageantry of the game. But I love the way that he carried himself. And he stuck to his beginnings, where it all started in Mount Olive, Mississippi. You would always see his mom. You would always see after the game, she cooked. You know, you always knew when Mrs. McNair cooked, because I'm telling you what, it looked like a bus line. It was just full of guys, you know, up in that line. So, again, I mean, that's what I missed about him. And, you know, and let me just say this, is that, you know, I had a chance to go and I played for 3 other organizations. And I can tell you what, all 32 teams are different. And I tell you what, when I left for free agency and I went to Denver, I got away from what made me what I call successful. And what I mean by that is being associated with winners, being associated with good people. And that's what I loved about that team, was we had high character guys like Bruce Matthews and Steve McNair. And that's what I equate into success, is when you can emulate guys like that, you have no reason but to be successful. And that's what I credit to Steve, is just what a great person he was. And that's what I learned from him, is that humbleness and that giving.
John, you referenced the touchdown pass to Aaron Kinney, a tight end. Steve McNair threw a lot of passes to Frank Wycheck over the years, a tight end. We've seen with this team, Delanie Walker has led the team in receptions 4 years in a row at one point. Even a guy like Bo Scaife has led this team in receptions. It's a team with a rich history of tight ends, at least certainly during its time in Tennessee. Austin Hooper, we've talked about some, probably the most prominent free agent signing in terms of bringing in a player from the outside this offseason. What, you know, are we looking at the return of the tight end as the Titans' leading receiver? And what's a number of receptions you're expecting from him this year?
I'm expecting some pretty good stuff from Austin Hooper, you know, and few different reasons for that. You know, one, we certainly have question marks at wide receiver at both 1 and 2. You know, Robert Woods, you know, everything looks great so far, but still coming back from an ACL. Treylon Burks, you know, in and out of off season. We don't know exactly what his health, his conditioning, and you know, how far behind the eight ball he's going to be coming into the season. So, you know, I think Austin Hooper is a natural target for Ryan Tannehill. He's got experience. You know, this is a guy who has twice caught over 70 passes in his career already, both when he was in Cleveland. And, you know, when you look at when he was in Atlanta, he did that.
Yeah,
then
right.
when you look at the kind of the fewer receptions he had the last couple of years in Cleveland, I think at least some of that had to do with the fact that he was also playing with another pretty good tight end, David Njoku, and they had to kind of split time, split receptions, that kind of thing. Austin Hooper is clearly number one going into the season at tight end. You know, Chigo Kwanko's going to be good, but he's still a rookie at this point. So with Tannehill looking for somebody to throw to, Hooper's got that that history. He's going to have plenty of opportunity. Todd Downing has said, you know, he loves tight ends. He used to be the tight ends coach. I'm going to throw out 55 to 60 catches for Austin Hooper. Maybe, you know, 500, 600 yards probably. And maybe we'll give him a good 5 or 6 touchdowns. I think he's going to be a good red zone target for Ryan Tannehill as well.
Yeah, it became clear what the Browns think of David Njoku this offseason when they gave him a massive contract. And, you know, Titans sign Austin Hooper for 1 year on the cheap. And it looks like, that's a deal that has a potential to really pay off big for this team. Denard, when the tight end is the number one option, is that a challenge for a defense to, you know, because it is not a common thing in this day and age? You know, can that give the Titans an edge if he is the number one guy in the passing game?
Yeah, that would be a huge edge. That can be a difference between you being a possibly playoff team. It can be it can also be detrimental to your offense. Listen, Austin, I love Austin Hooper. I mean, I watched this guy since he was at Stanford. And what you love about him, he's just not it's not like he's just a pass, what I call a pass happy first tight end. You know, he's just looking to catch the football. He's a solid blocker. I mean, he's solid in the blocking game. And that's what you're going to need as well on this team, is a solid tight end to kind of help seal those edges. But when you think about it, I want to go back a little bit on what John was talking about, is when you look at his production, when he was in, let's say, Atlanta, 2016 to 2019, 2 years, with 2007, with 2018 and 2019, he was a Pro Bowl tight end. And John, let me tell you something, John and David, he's not that far removed from that big deal that he got in Cleveland. I mean, they locked him up. It was a 4-year, $42 million deal. So that lets you know how productive he was in Atlanta, the way that they played him at Cleveland. The problem with Cleveland is last year in 2021, and I hate to say this because I love Baker Mayfield, they were so inconsistent at the quarterback position. Baker struggled. Again, when your quarterback struggles, typically your offense is going to struggle. And not to mention, he comes from that Atlanta system where they was pass happy, pass heavy first, and then you go to Cleveland where it's like you're going to get a dose of that running game. The running game is going to dictate the course of the game, of course, because you got those two great backs in Kareem Hunt and Nick Chubb. So once again, that hurts the play of the tight end. But again, Austin Hooper, if you allow him to get over 500 yards, 500 or 600 yards, he's going to be a monster in Todd Downing's offense, because you know Todd Downing loves to utilize the tight end in the passing games.
And one thing I think that's overlooked and should be noted with Austin Hooper too is those big years in Atlanta, his position coach was Mike Mularkey, the former Titans head coach, and Mike Mularkey's offense, Todd Downing's offense right now comes largely from Arthur Smith, who replaced Mike Mularkey as tight ends coach when Mike Mularkey was elevated to interim head coach. And then in 2016, when Mularkey took over, he put in his exotic smash mouth offense. And a lot of what Arthur Smith did was taken from that Mike Mularkey offense. So when you're talking about what the Titans are doing, what, you know, the terminology, the concepts of what's going on with the tight ends, it is probably really familiar to him based on what Mike Mularkey was saying to him those couple years in Atlanta. And I think that's one of those little things that can make the adjustment easy. And you talk about his blocking. He's a big man. Like he is, you know, like you stand next to him, you're like, my goodness, this is a big fella. And you know, the numbers, I agree, John. I think 55, 60 receptions is a good number. I think the more important number is, you know, if I was a gambling man, I would put money down that he's going to lead this team in touchdown catches. I think you're talking somewhere around 8 touchdown catches, because he is he is that big body. He has done that before in his career too. He's got a comfort level when the field is short. So he's, you know, that's a guy. And based on what we've seen, I think he's a guy who has to be productive for this team to be good. And there's a lot of reasons to think he can be productive. John, you mentioned the wide receiver questions, and we have talked about them. An NFL.com piece this week talked about the best available free agents still out there. And I believe Will Fuller, who's a downfield threat in Houston, had a lot of injury problems, went to Miami last year, listed him as the best possible option out there. Is he the best possible option? Is he someone the Titans should look at as training camp draws near?
Look at, yes. I don't think you can help but look at Will Fuller. But, you know, maybe like the downside of Will Fuller is kind of maybe summed up in sort of what happened to him last year. You know, he kind of he bet on himself going into last season. You know, he signed a 1-year deal in Miami, thinking, okay, I'm going to show everybody that my injury problems and everything else, my PED suspension, it's all behind me now. I'm going to have a big year and sign a big contract, you know, for the following year. Well, the bet did not work, to say the least, for Will Fuller. He wound up playing in 2 games before going on IR for a broken finger, you know, and sadly, that's the more often than not with Will Fuller, you end up talking about the games that he missed rather than the ones that he played in. I think, you know, if you look over the past 5 years, never more than 11 games, average of just over 8 games a season. So, you know, there's really been some big gaps because of injuries. And as I mentioned, there was a PED suspension in there as well. Nonetheless, I do think, you know, you have to take a hard look. The Titans are a team that is in need of speed. There's no doubt about that. And that is the one that brings about it. He was in the middle of a career year in 2020, 53 catches, almost 900 yards, 8 touchdowns when he got hit with that PED suspension, which, of course, makes you wonder a little bit, were PEDs helping him to that career year? You have to wonder about that a little bit. But nonetheless, you know, I can't help but think with the Titans' ties to the Texans, Tim Kelly is this team's passing coordinator, passing game coordinator right now. And he was the offensive coordinator for 2 years when Will Fuller was there. So they know plenty about Will Fuller. Just a question of whether they want to take that chance, take that risk on him. You know, I think it has to be a very team-friendly contract if the Titans are going to go there. But worth a look anyway.
Yeah, when people talk about guys like Will Fuller, that sort of speed, you know, you hear the term taking the top off a defense. You know, Denard, talk a little bit about that. You know, what kind of problems a Will Fuller or somebody like him would pose for a defense, and how badly does this Titans offense need a guy like that right now?
Well, let's just look at the projected starters coming in 2022. I mean, look at it. You have Robert Woods, who's coming off an ACL injury. Okay, you have Treylon Burks, we're not going to talk about.
We've done plenty of that.
Yeah, we've done plenty of that. So, but think about who is your – amongst all of these receivers, Robert Woods, Treylon Burks, let's go, Nick Westbrook, Ikenne. Who's your leading receiver out of those three? Right now, going into the first game of the season, would be Nick Westbrook Ikenne that has caught passes from Ryan Tannehill. And when I look at this receiving core, look at the backups just for a second. You got Des Fitzpatrick. You got Kyle Phillips, assuming he makes this team. Cody Hollister, Mason Kinsey, and Racy McMath. not one of those receivers. You have one receiver among four or five of these guys that I just mentioned that's had a 1,000-yard season, and that's Robert Woods in 2018 and 19. And when you're talking about David taking the top off of a defense, you know what that will do for offense? Is it allows you to run the football. If you can't top the defense, guess what? You can bring an extra safety or an extra defender in the box and take away the run and say, hey, beat me on the perimeter. And that's exactly what happened last year against Cincinnati. You had one player that can top the defense. That was A.J. Brown. Other than A.J., who else was able to get on top of the defense for Cincinnati? It wasn't Julio. It wasn't Nick Westbrook-Ikhine. So you need a deep threat. If you don't have a deep threat as a cornerback, you know what I'm doing? I'm sitting there squatting saying, hey, I dare you to run past me. And if you can't, if you don't have the ability of an offense to get over the top, then David, what happens is it puts you, it makes you one dimensional. And what you don't need is to sit back and say, hey, we're going, everything is going to be predicated on the play of the king. You can't do, he can't do it alone. And that's what you don't want. So once again, I think Will Fuller, his issue has been durability. I know he had an ACL tear. I know he's had, a broken collarbone in, 2017, 2018, a torn ACL. And he ended up missing some time because of that in 2019. But when this guy, when his game is on, he's averaging about 15 yards a catch. So that's telling me as a defensive back, I better play him deep to short. That's like Randy Moss, you know, when you talk about when he's healthy, when he's healthy. And again, when you're going into your seventh year, you have a chip on your shoulder. I'm sure he's heard it a lot. What happened at Miami, I'm sure he knows that, listen, I had a productive year in 2020. If he can emulate that season in 2020 and bring that to Nashville, that'll be a huge asset for this offense. And once again, you're talking about familiarity breeds success. Tim Kelly, Houston, Will Fuller, Houston, you know, Houston, look at that. That's what you want. If you look at some of the players, just take a long look at this. Zach Cunningham, Houston, what do? You bring him over to Nashville. Why? Because there's some familiarity. These coaches know each other. That's what coaches do. They bring in players that they know. I think this would be a huge addition to the Tennessee offense in 2022.
Yeah, and it doesn't have to be whether it's Fuller or somebody like him. This doesn't have to be somebody who catches 75 balls and 10 touchdown passes. As I was thinking about this and I was listening to you, Denard, I remember thinking back, it was probably 2000, 2001, somewhere around there. One of your teammates, again, Chris Sanders, was a guy who could flat out fly. Just run. and his production, really productive as a rookie. His numbers sort of trended down over the course of his career, but he got a contract extension. And I remember a couple of days later, there were a couple of us out on the practice field talking to Floyd Reese and sort of giving him a hard time. Like, why, you know, this guy's numbers are going the wrong way. Why are you going to pay him? And he said, I'll take you inside right now and show you the film. He said, every time that guy steps on the field, the defense behaves differently. And you know, the point he was making was exactly what you said, was he was backing people off and giving Eddie George room to run. It's not that they had to throw the ball to Chris Sanders every time he was out there, but every time he was out there, the defense said, uh-oh, that's a guy who can get behind us. We got to make sure that doesn't happen. And that is an element that I agree. I think this team could use, you know, without actually having to have big production from him.
David, I got a question. How did Tiptoes get a contract extension and they didn't even return my phone calls? I'm just glad you brought that up.
That is a podcast for another day. That'll take us the whole time.
60 games in 4 years. I don't care what people talk about in 1999 Super Bowl. But how did he get a contract extension and they couldn't even call me back?
Yeah,
he told me that.
The right number? Was it the right number that you called?
Believe me, trust me. It was a. I know Floyd Reese's number. Hey, may it rest in peace. But let me tell you something, Floyd, you're wrong for that, man.
And as we wrap this thing up here, we'll take a look around the division a little bit. The no question, I think, in anybody's mind, if the Titans are going to win a third division championship in a row, they've got to get past the Indianapolis Colts. So we won't do rapid fire here, but we'll kind of go quickly. Denard, what concerns you most about the Indianapolis Colts when you look at them?
Well, no more Carson Wentz, and the savvy vet Matt Ryan is there. Will he be the answer, David and John? I don't know. But again, it's all about Jonathan Taylor and that offensive line. I'm not putting it on Matt Ryan, but once again, a healthy Jonathan Taylor, as long as he's there, I tell you what, watch out. This team is dangerous.
John Glennon, what concerns you most about the Indianapolis Colts?
Yeah, certainly. I think it's an upgrade at quarterback for the Colts and Matt Ryan. They've got some young talent as in the pass catching department, sort of unproven in that regard. But I'm not overly impressed, you know, for the most part by that offensive line. You're looking at the tackles, Matt Pryor, Braden Smith, you know, aren't going to scare too many people. What I think if I'm a, you know, a Titans fan, what concerns me more, given the questions about the Titans offense, is the Colts defense. You know, it was pretty solid last year. I think it tied for ninth in the league in points allowed, about 22 points a game, and a couple nice additions to that defense this offseason. When you're talking about on the edge, Yannick Ngakoue, who can really get after the passer, and of course, cornerback Stephon Gilmore, who's had incredible success over the years. You know, a top flight corner, and they had a veteran safety in there, Rodney McLeod, you know, who's going to be pretty good as well. And when you talk about the Colts defense, as I said, was already solid, you know, had DeForest Buckner, has Darius Leonard, and you add, you know, three or four more good players to the Colts done. I'm more concerned about the Colts defense and what problems they might cause, you know, a Titans offense with some question marks right now.
Yeah. For me, I'm going the obvious. You know, Darius Leonard is the closest thing I have seen to Ray Lewis, I think, since Ray Lewis, in terms of a guy who just believes he is going to make every play on every single snap. Yet, even as he's doing that, he inspires his teammates in a way that they play better and they play harder. And he's, you know, he's a guy that I think can just he just causes all kinds of problems. He's one of the few players in the league I think is not going to be intimidated on any level by Derrick Henry. And you know, when you talk about the interior of the Titans offensive line, an aging Ben Jones, a Nate Davis at right guard who didn't have his best year last year, question marks at left guard, not having Roger Saffold, Darius Leonard could be a huge problem in those two matchups this year. But we will look at the other division opponents as we go through here the next couple weeks. But that is gonna do it for us in this edition of Believe in Titans. Denard Walker, thank you, as always. Good to see you.
Thank you.
John Glennon, thank you.
Thank you.
And I, again, am David Beauclair. Thank you all for listening, and we will be back next week with Believe in Titans.